Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. One of Governor Peter Shumlin's top legislative priorities is his health care initiative that's designed to address the growing Medicaid cost shift. It also provides additional funds for the Green Mountain Care Board and the Blueprint for Health. Shumlin proposed a 0.7% payroll tax to help pay for the plan. The tax would raise roughly $90 million on an annual basis, and the money would be matched with $100 million in federal funds. But the plan has received very lukewarm support at the State House. Senate President John Campbell said using the payroll tax would hurt the state's economy. And Campbell says this is not the year for this kind of proposal.
I just think that it was a wrong time in the sense of how the governor wanted to address that. And they were planning on doing a payroll tax. We have to understand is that these businesses employ people. And if we don't have if businesses close, we don't have employment. And if employment, we have higher unemployment. So it is a circle that we in Montpelier have to be mindful of. And so I think that that one is something that it's probably best left for another day.
So why are legislative leaders so unenthusiastic about the governor's health care initiative? That's one of the questions we have for our guest today, Governor Peter Shumlin. Governor, great to have you back on Vermont Edition.
Hey, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
So as we mentioned, right at the start of the session, you had an ambitious health care plan raising almost $200 million combined in state and federal funds. You wanted to increase Medicaid reimbursement rates, and you said that that would help deal with the cost shift, and perhaps private health care premiums could go down by as much as 5%. You know, now the House is looking at a plan that would raise around $8 million for your health care plan, a far cry from the almost $200 million that you outlined. Why do you think your overall plan has failed to win support at the State House this year?
Well, let's talk about what the challenge is and then answer your question. The challenge is, and, you know, I'm going to respectfully disagree with the comments just made by the President Pro Tem of the Senate. The biggest challenge for business and for individuals in Vermont and the state budget and our schools and the pressure on our property taxes all boils down to growth in health care costs. If you could remove health care costs growing faster than our incomes, faster than the rate of our incomes as a state, huge win for all of us. And all the problems that we talk about come back to this problem. Now, we also know that for years, Republicans, Democrats, all have been agreeing that the fact that we're underpaying for our Medicare patients in Vermont is not only hurting them because they can't get a provider who can afford to take care of them, so they have trouble getting access. It's killing our providers, and it's, you know, our small docs, nurses, VNA, all the folks that are providing service at the lower end. And obviously, it's hurting business because when we underpay for Medicaid, that gets shifted to the people who pay. So, you know, I guess where the President Pro Tem and I agree is we got to keep businesses strong. Where we disagree is if you don't get health care costs under control, there's no business that's going to be strong. It's just going to kill us all if we don't get this trend under control. So having said that, this is tough stuff. You know, politicians, this is what we've been doing. We've been saying, let's sign up as many people for Medicaid as we possibly can under the Affordable Care Act to make sure that vulnerable Vermonters have access to insurance. And we've been doing that with great enthusiasm. We now have literally, in a state of 625,000 people, we have 184,000 last year on Medicaid. So it's 30% of our state. And we're proud that we've cut our uninsured rates in half, that we have compete now with Massachusetts with the lowest uninsured rate in the nation. I'm proud of that. That we literally have 3.5% of Vermonters uninsured, so we virtually have universal coverage. So we sign all these folks up, and then we say to our nurses, our providers, our docs, our system, but we're not going to pay for it. My plan was to pay for it. And what it would have done, what it will do if they'll adopt my plan, is strengthen health care for the Vermonters I just talked about. Create a sustainable budget for Vermont, because health care is driving our budget like mad, our state budget, and reduce costs for businesses. It's a win-win-win.
So House Healthcare Chairman Bill Lippert understands all those facts, but he says his scaled-back plan, that $8 million plan, is the most realistic plan that can pass this year.
It appears to be the best we can do at this point in time, and I believe we do need to move it forward in order to address some of these issues. We had hoped to have a more substantial package. It's about making hard choices in a difficult financial time.
So is this scaled back plan, this $8 million plan, worth doing?
I think Chairman Lippert and his committee did great work in the House by coming up with a much more ambitious plan earlier in the session. I'm not going to comment on what might come from the House because, frankly, it changes every single day. This is what I know, and I've met with Senate leadership again today just to say, listen, we've got to do this. We've got to have the courage of our convictions to solve this problem, to grow jobs, to grow our economy, and to make true on our promise to Vermont healthcare providers that if you provide healthcare in Vermont, we're going to actually make sure that you're going to get reimbursed at a rate that you can afford to deliver healthcare in Vermont. And the way you do that, in my view, is by going to the 0.7% payroll tax. Let me tell you what it'll do. It will not only take care of the problem of giving low-income Vermonters access to providers so that they don't have to turn them away. It will not only keep our vulnerable healthcare system alive by having fair payments, but it's also going to help schools, local communities, businesses, and the state of Vermont balance their budget. So I just, when we talk about budgeting for the state, let's just go to that for a minute because we all know we're struggling with this $112 million problem. You got to do more than just look at a one-year fix for our budget. If we don't adopt my plan, you're going to come back next year to a $40 million budget problem because you didn't adopt my plan. Why? Because by drawing down $110 million that we're leaving on the table for healthcare, we will have literally a $40 million surplus in our budget next year that can be dedicated to healthcare costs that we're otherwise going to have to deal with in next year's budget. So there's all kinds of reasons why we got to get this done. And I continue to say to legislative leadership, listen, I know this is hard, but let's look at the facts. The facts are important. And if you really want to make changes for Vermont's quality of life, create jobs, and make our state more sustainable, this is an important step. It really is.
Today on the program, our guest is Governor Peter Shumlin. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. We've been talking about a payroll tax, the governor's plan to address the Medicaid cost shift. Perhaps you have some thoughts about that. You also might have some thoughts about how the legislature should address the $112 million budget gap. You can give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net or give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. We've got Senate President John Campbell saying, no way for the payroll tax that you proposed. We've got House Speaker Shap Smith saying, absolutely no way for the payroll tax that you've proposed. So how do you hold on to this notion that lawmakers are going to adopt your plan?
I didn't say they were going to adopt it. I said that it's the right thing to do, and I believe what we should do for Vermont, that to serve the people that elected us, to solve real problems, this is what we should be doing. Obviously, I'm hopeful that they will take another look at it, and that's what I've asked them to do. Having said that, listen, here's the challenge. What my plan also does is solve some of the ideas they have that aren't all that popular either. I don't hear Vermonters clamoring to have their charitable deductions taken away from them. I don't hear many Vermonters clamoring to have their catastrophic health care costs taken away from them, particularly seniors who often have catastrophic costs, and if insurance doesn't cover the deduction, important. I'm not having a lot of Vermonters come up to me and say, Governor, please take away my home mortgage deduction. Those are the choices they're offering. If you go with my plan, you don't have to make any of those bad choices.
So we do have an interesting plan that came out today from Rutland Senator Kevin Mullen. It's somewhere between what the House is considering and what you proposed. He wants to raise about $30 million in state revenue that would be matched with about $30 million in federal funds. He gets and to be used for the purposes that you outlined, addressing the cost shift, providing some funds for the Green Mountain Care Board and for the Blueprint for Health. He gets his new revenue by raising the cigarette tax by a dollar, increasing the health care claims assessment by 0.9%, and also increasing the current assessment on employers who don't offer health coverage to their employees. What are your thoughts about that approach?
Of his $50 million package, just by the way, the cigarette tax raises a very small bit of it. I think it's $6 million. So he's really doing it through the assessment and the other provision you just outlined. I met with Senator Mullen earlier in the week. I've got to hand it to him. He is actually addressing some of the cost shift, the same problem I'm talking about. So, you know, I think that the fact that we have, you know, someone in the Finance Committee who is saying, hey, we've got to solve some of the problem the governor's talking about. He's coming up with a different way of paying for it. We should be having that conversation.
So would those types of assessments on employers who don't offer insurance and also the health care claims assessment, are they on the table for discussion?
I would encourage any solutions that are sensible that solve the problem I just outlined. I like my funding plan better. I'll be honest with you about that. Senator Mullen doesn't. He's honest about that too. The reason I like mine better is that mine actually enables us to get some of the money back to the people who pay it in a reduction in insurance premiums that they otherwise would have paid. And, you know, that's what the Green Mountain Healthcare Board does, and they do it well. But the answer to your question is, you know, I want to see us address this issue. I'm willing to have conversations about the best way to get there. I think it's a real mistake if we go home without strengthening our healthcare system, creating a sustainable budget, which my plan does, and reducing costs for businesses that are struggling to keep up with costs right now.
Now, you mentioned reducing private health insurance premiums if your plan goes into place. Green Mountain Care Board Al Gobay said that's something that he can't guarantee because there's so many factors involved. We also got this email from a doctor in Morrisville who says about 80% of Vermont is blanketed with federally qualified health clinics and regional health clinics, which get paid cost plus. So primary care physicians are getting paid adequately. Also, it's a pie in the sky dream that private insurance companies will reduce the premiums.
Well, they won't, but the regulators will. And Al Gobay is correct. He can't guarantee that he's going to get every penny back to the people who pay it. On average, he will tell you that because of the way we regulate healthcare costs in Vermont, he is able to return, but to order premium decreases when the insurance companies come to him for rates every single year or come to the board. So, you know, all I can say is the doctor's right. The insurance companies aren't going to voluntarily do this. It's going to be we go through a process right now in Vermont where rates are set. You may recall last year they came in for much higher rates than the board approved. And the Green Mountain Care Board has the ability to calculate some of this into the premiums that they set every single year under the current system. So the system's in place. We don't have to create a new one.
Let's go to our listeners and start with Robert in Stowe. Hey, Robert, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Governor Shumlin, I would have voted for you on several occasions, but I have yet to hear you apologize for the disaster of Vermont Health Connect, hundreds of millions of dollars down the drain. I'm a big believer in the buck stops with the CEO, and you happen to be the CEO of this state. Why should voters trust you with any further pie-in-the-sky plans when the track record for Vermont Health Connect is, by all accounts, an unmitigated disaster? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Well, first of all, Robert, I hope you've heard me express many, many times my extreme disappointment with Vermont Health Connect. I take full responsibility for it, and I think I've said numerous times it's the biggest disappointment of my public life. Having said that, I think you're wrong that it won't bear fruit for Vermont. As you probably know, we not only have more folks signed up for the Affordable Care Act per capita than any other state, but we're also using it to administer our Medicaid system. So Vermont taxpayers, the money that we've spent is all federal money, or mostly federal money, and the Vermont taxpayers would have had to pay for the upgrade of our antiquated Medicaid system. So we conquered that one with federal money at the same time. Optum, as you know, we fired our first contractor, as did the President of the United States, and many other states have gone through this. We brought on Optum. Optum has right now delivered on everything that they promised to deliver as we get this functioning the way you and I hoped it would, and we continue to believe that we're on track to make it the exchange that we wanted it to be. So all I can say is I disagree a little bit with your conclusion. I share your disappointment, but I believe that before we're done, we'll have an exchange that does what all of us wanted it to do.
Do you ever wonder how the issue of health care, which was once thought to be one of your greatest assets, potentially a trademark and legacy of your time as governor, has actually turned out to be one of your biggest liabilities?
Well, sure I do. And, you know, it's not just me. It's everyone that tried to implement the Affordable Care Act. I'm not the only governor that faced this challenge and found it tremendously difficult, or a politician.
But some states got it right.
Very few.
And the ones that use the federal model have done pretty well.
The federal model, for a number of reasons, wouldn't have worked for Vermont. And you may recall that the federal model wasn't working very well just a few months ago either. So I would actually, you know, argue that for any governor that has entered into trying to build their own exchange, which there were a number of us, that some have had worse failures than we. Take a look at the state of Oregon as an example, who literally built an exchange through their purveyor was Oracle, gave up, didn't get the money back, and had to work out a special arrangement with the federal government. I mean, I won't start going through the states, but it's been a huge challenge for everybody. I'm not absolving myself. I am one of many governors that's facing this challenge. The one that really got it right was Kentucky, but they didn't have the challenge that Vermont has, which is to not only interface with the IRS and the information down in D.C., but also we've got to, because we subsidize at a higher level than a federal exchange, we've got to interface with our Vermont tax information and be able to make that website interface with both. So all I can say is anyone who was involved with implementing the timeline on the Affordable Care Act had a real challenge, and it's obviously been a huge disappointment.
No, I was just thinking 8 months ago, you were hoping that Vermont was going to be the first state in the country to implement a single-payer system. Now you're struggling with the decision of should we move to a federal exchange?
That's true, but I think we sometimes also don't focus on the other things that I promised to do that we're getting right and that we're making real progress on. And there's two pieces to this. As you know, I really wanted to move to a publicly financed system. We know that the costs, the taxes to move from premiums to taxes was high enough so that no legislator has yet taken our plan and said this is a good idea, introduced a bill. In other words, there seemed to be consensus that the way the math worked, it wasn't going to work for us right now. Having said that, we're making huge progress moving Vermont to a system where we move from quantity of payment to quality, where we move from a system that focuses on health care to one that focuses on health. And we're working together, the Green Mountain Healthcare Board, with CMS, with President Obama, to try and get an all-payer waiver to change from a fee-for-service quantity difference-driven system to one that rewards for outcomes and quality. I know you had the chair of the Green Mountain Healthcare Board on here recently, Ago Bay. But if we can accomplish that, that will be a huge step forward.
Today on the program, our guest is Governor Peter Shumlin. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. If you've got a question or a comment for the governor, this is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today is Governor Peter Shumlin. Our phone number here is 1-800-639-2211. We've been talking about health care. We're going to shift over to talk about taxes. Governor, you mentioned your disappointment with the house tax package, and that was something that capped deductions for people who itemized their deductions. And the most popular deductions, as you mentioned, mortgage interest, unusually high health care expenses, charitable contributions, property taxes that have been paid. Well, the Senate Finance Committee is working on a plan that takes a very different approach. Committee Chairman Tim Ash told us that he wants the charitable deduction to stay in state law, but only for contributions to Vermont organizations.
Clearly, we want to encourage that kind of giving. If someone gives a $100,000 donation to a law school in another state that perhaps they graduated from, it's not clear necessarily why the Vermont tax code provides a subsidy to support that giving out of state.
The Finance Committee is also looking at a plan that would cap mortgage interest, basically on a $500,000 mortgage. It allows all the deductions for health care expenses that you were concerned about. Are they on the right track?
You know, it's very difficult to know exactly how to respond to a bill that hasn't been voted on or passed yet, because you never know quite what the details are. And in tax policy, the details really matter. But going back to the House plan, let's talk about where we all agree. I proposed, you know, my general feeling, as you know, is that our our income taxes, our sales taxes, our rooms and meals taxes in Vermont are high enough. And as governor, I'm happy to report that we haven't raised them as long as I've been governor, and I hope we don't. Having said that, I did propose a fix in a loophole in our tax code in my budget that raises $15.5 million from people who itemize by finishing the job of removing the ability to deduct last year's taxes from this year's tax bill, state taxes. And that makes sense, and I think the House agrees with me, and I expect the Senate probably does too, because it provides no altruistic purpose. It doesn't try to promote behavior that we want to help grow our economy and improve our quality of life. When you start talking about going after, no matter how you slice it and how you try to you know, present it, when you start taking away charitable deductions, when you take away mortgage deductions, and we take away health care, big health care expenses, you know, from deductibility, you're taking away deductions that we put in place to really help people in the areas where we want to help them. We would be lost without our charities in Vermont. I do not believe that you can easily, in federal tax law and constitutionally, start telling people what charities in-state, out-of-state they can give to in your tax code. And if we did, we'd probably really regret it because we're a teeny little state, and we certainly take in a lot of out-of-state contributions to our nonprofits, and we sure as hate would hate to see those out-states doing the same thing to us. So my point is, charity, home mortgage deduction, healthcare deductibility, leave it alone.
Would your concerns be solved if you still had charitable contributions to Vermont organizations? You left the unusually high medical expenses in place. Those would be totally deductible. And you capped the mortgage interest. Does it make sense to you that somebody who has a $2 million mortgage, Senator Rash would say it makes no sense to him, that a person with a $2 million mortgage is allowed to deduct all of that interest?
Well, you're not going to get much money if you start start capping $2 million mortgages in Vermont, because not very many Vermonters have $2 million mortgages. So my point is this. If you go with my plan, you don't need any of this stuff. If you go with a 7/10 of 1% payroll tax, which we get back to some of the folks who pay it, at least some of it, not all of it, but some of it, under the plan that I've just put forward to them, because I adopted the House Health and Welfare Committee spending plan as sort of the example of my plan. But if you do my plan, you don't need to do any of the stuff. You don't need the money.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Chris in Williston. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for having me. Good afternoon, I should say. Thank you for taking my call, Governor Shumlin. Pleasure to speak with you.
Hey, Chris.
I guess I've been listening to the program. The topic's kind of strayed, but getting back to the health care exchange, if you will, I'm just kind of curious. I've been kind of – I'm a divorced dad that, you know, I pay child support. You know, I have to rent now. I've, you know, been out of my home for a few years and whatnot. And I work in the construction business for a small, you know, small business, a small employer that does not offer me health care. Mm-hmm. And I've really just been back and forth with the health care exchange about, you know, how do I get coverage? I mean, obviously, if, you know, if something should happen at work, my employer covers me under the workman's compensation
right.
plan. But, you know, I mean, if I'm slicing a tomato in my kitchen and slice right. my finger open, you know, that's basically an out-of-pocket expense. And the, you know, the premiums that I've been quoted are just, they're just unaffordable. You know, I'm finding a hard time discerning between what's being called the Affordable Health Care Act. And, you know, the monthly premiums are $350, $400 a month with outrageous deductibles. And I'm just wondering if there's any hope for me in the future to have reasonable coverage for someone that, you know, goes out and swings a hammer every day. I mean, I earn a decent wage, but at the same time, I'm paying out every month for child support. I'm you know, doing
right.
that by law. I used to qualify for Medicaid, but then since the new health care plan came into place, it's, you know, that they don't even take that into consideration. So, I mean, is there any light at the end of the tunnel, I guess, is my question.
Chris, we appreciate your phone call. We also got an email along similar lines of Chris's concern from someone named Jim, who felt that VHAP, the old plan before the Affordable Care Act, was a very good plan and was very affordable. Jim Rodison said, I have glaucoma, will go blind without eye pressure medicine under VHAP. His eye doctor visit copays were $10 or $20. Now they're $169. His prescription eye drops under VHAP, roughly $50 a month, now costs over $200 a month. He can't understand how things have gotten so expensive.
And that's really the question for all of us is, and going back to Chris's question too, the fact of the matter is that if we can't get healthcare costs under control in this state and, frankly, the rest of the country, we are all doomed economically. It doesn't matter how much you get paid to swing a hammer. It doesn't matter how, our costs are rising much faster than can be sustained. So I would say two things. First of all, that's why I wanted so badly to move to a universal healthcare system where we have healthcare because we're Vermonters, not because of where we work or how much we make. Obviously, that part's not going to happen. But the part that I am determined to make happen is to move from a system that where we reward our providers for quantity of care and is gobbling up money faster than we can make it, to one where they get rewarded for keeping us healthy. And I think that's going to be the trend in the country. I think it's going to be the trend in Vermont. And I think it's going to help in this challenge. And if we can't get this right, I got to tell you, the numbers are just eye-popping. I mean, the projections are that we return to 6% healthcare growth in the next decade across America. If you take our current healthcare spend in Vermont, this affects every one of us and everything that we do, and you apply a 6% growth trend to that, it is eye-poppingly scary. So we've got to get this right. And the frustration that Chris is feeling and other people are feeling right now is that we simply are spending too much money than we can afford on healthcare in a system that can't survive unless they do quantity.
Let me ask you a question about the sales tax. We talked about how the Senate Finance Committee is looking at the income tax. They're also looking at a plan to expand the base of the sales tax to include services and then lower the overall rate. For instance, right now, if you get your car repaired, you pay the sales tax on the parts, but you don't pay the sales tax on the labor. And Senator Ash says that labor should be taxed as well.
And one of the things that we have found is a near stagnation in the sales tax base as consumption has moved away from goods and towards services. And it's an important policy choice of whether we want to continue to rely on a sales tax to fund a good portion of general fund operations with a base that isn't going anywhere.
What do you think about this idea? We have a 6% sales tax right now. We don't tax professional services, attorneys, accountants, all sorts of people, architects, just to stay with the letter A in those professions. What do you think about the idea of lowering the tax rate but broadening the base?
Well, first of all, when I go out and talk to Vermonters, which I do a lot of, I don't hear them saying to me, Governor, could you please find more things to tax? It's just not what I'm hearing. What they're saying is, help make Vermont's economy work for every single Vermonter. And raising more taxes on us, when we already have high sales tax, high rooms and all the rest, is not easy for us. So please don't. Second, in terms of broadening it, let's just talk about the history of the sales tax. When the sales tax was passed by Governor Dean Davis, it was at 3%. And everyone said, it'll be low. It won't hurt us against New Hampshire because, 3%, who's going to worry about 3%? And frankly, probably most Vermonters wouldn't worry about 3% that much. Then, over time, it slowly ticked up. And now it's 6%. And I often hear legislators say, why don't we raise it another half point or another point? And every time we do, it's a huge gift to the state of New Hampshire. I've got nothing against New Hampshire, but I don't particularly want to drive their economic development. We've watched our retail cross over the river to New Hampshire. And they're booming on the other side of the river now. And it's really hurting our downtowns in Vermont on the eastern side. So my fear of that proposal is that, first of all, they'll expand it. And then the next time they need revenue, they'll say, oh, well, look, it's only at 3.5% now, but we could raise it to 4.5% and solve all these problems, and then 5.5%, and then you'll be back at 6%. So I'm not enthusiastic about it.
We got this email from Brian who wants to know whether or not you're going to veto S-141, that's the gun bill that passed the Senate, also passed the House, and I believe the Senate yesterday gave its approval to the House's version of the bill. Brian wrote us, you've stated numerous times in the past that Vermont's current gun laws work well. We don't need any new ones. He wants to know, what are you going to do with that bill?
Well, I'm going to sign it, assuming that it does what I've been told it does. I haven't had a chance to actually read it, and we're going to do that and have my lawyers review it. But I'm inclined to sign it for this simple reason. It's a shadow of the bill that I objected to when it was introduced. And I think that reasonable Vermonters would agree with me that at this point, the bill only does common sense things that no reasonable person could object to. And I think that's why, you know, the Federation, sportsmen across, men and women across Vermont, you know, don't really object to the bill at this point. It does some sensible things. I voted. I don't, as you know, my belief is that Vermont has the gun laws that we need and we ought to keep them. But it doesn't mean we don't do sensible things. I voted for a bill that didn't allow kids to take guns to school. And I think that was sensible. I think the provisions in this bill, having fixed that 18 months in a mental health provision that I didn't like, that's now gone. You know, it's a shadow of the bill that was introduced, you know, I think it's sensible.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Walter in Bristol. Hi, Walter. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. Thank you for having me. Hello, Governor Shumlin. Thanks for asking my question. I'm from Bristol. And I'm just really happy to see that the state's making a lot of progress on renewable energy. And we really need to get off fossil fuels. And in order to do so, we're going to have to build a lot more clean energy and solar and wind projects in the state. So I was wondering if you could just comment on the reset legislation that will encourage utilities to build more clean energy and you know, promote efficiency as well.
Well, thanks for the call, Walter. I think the reset bill is one of the more exciting bills on energy that I've had the pleasure of working together with the legislature on that I recommended. You know, when it comes to jobs and economic development, there's a lot of reasons why Vermont now has the lowest unemployment rate this side of the Mississippi. We're down to 3.86%. Some people sometimes say when I cite that number, well, Governor, look at the other unemployment numbers that are also reflected. We're seeing real strength in every single measure of our unemployment numbers trending in this last report. But one reason is that we are building out renewables. We have eight times the number of solar panels in the state that we had when I was sworn in as governor. We're really doing energy efficiency right. And literally 4 to 4.5% of our jobs in the state are now related to this green economy. So what RESET says is, let's go the next step. And the next step is to put the incentives in place so that literally the model for our utilities and our renewable energy community and our energy efficiency community will be that the power company will come into your house and say, with on-bill financing, we will rip out your old doors and windows, insulate this thing, blow it with cellulose, put solar panels on your roof or your yard, put a heat pump in your basement, getting rid of that old oil burner, and make you energy self-sufficient and have you dump what you don't use back into the grid so your neighbors can buy green, clean power. That is huge in terms of jobs, economic development, and dealing with our climate change challenges, smarter than I think any other state. So the RESET bill is basically going to take the next step in what I call the energy revolution in Vermont that's moving us from a business model where utilities used to sign up as much big power as they could out there somewhere, transmit it to you through these huge lines, hundreds and thousands of miles away, thousands of miles away in many cases, and instead move you to a model where it's locally generated green, clean power, affordable for every single Vermonter. So I am with you, and I do recognize that this change, like any change, can hit resistance. But I hope we don't make the mistake of turning backwards on the huge progress we're making to build out solar, to build out renewables, to get energy efficiency right, and to get off of the, you know, having more and more Vermonters move to locally generated power.
Today on the program, our guest is Governor Peter Shumlin. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today, Governor Peter Shumlin, and our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. We've gotten a couple of emails on this subject, and that's immunizations. The Senate this week voted 18-11 to support legislation to do away with the philosophical exemption to the state's mandatory immunization law. Critics of the bill say it undermines a parent's right to determine what's best for their children. But Rutland Senator Kevin Mullen says this is a case where the health of society trumps the rights of parents.
Fundamentally, I would hate to tell anybody to do anything, but when it comes to the public good, there are things that you make decisions on. There are some decisions that you have to make that are for the children and for society, and I think this is one of them.
So Kelly wrote us, will you support or veto this bill?
Well, you know, I've taken the good advice from former governors, everyone that I can speak with, which is everyone that's alive, and each of them gave me some very good advice, unanimous advice on this one, which is when asked whether you're going to veto a bill or not, never comment until you see the bill. So I won't answer that question, and I don't answer that question, not trying to be evasive, but you never know what you're going to be sent. Having said that, you know, Senator Mullen makes an articulate case for as you just heard. Others make an articulate case on the other side. We had this debate just 2.5 years ago in Vermont, and I signed a bill that was intended to, because I believe in vaccinating kids. There's no question that the science suggests this is absolutely the right thing to do. And we passed a bill that we felt would educate parents about the risks, not only to them, but to other kids and other people if they don't vaccinate. And, you know, we want to give that bill a chance to work. We just had the debate. Senator Mullen didn't get his way 2.5 years ago, or his view didn't prevail. So it's not surprising to see the folks who didn't get their view try again. The House voted overwhelmingly last time not to go along with the Senate's view. So, you know, I'm open to the conversation. I'm open to the question. But all I can say is we just dealt with this one. And, you know, we are hopeful that the bill that we passed will encourage more parents to vaccinate their kids. And I think it may well.
And in the gubernatorial debate on VPR last fall, you were asked this question, you know, would you support removing the philosophical exemption? And you said no, you would not support it. So is that what you believe today?
I think what I said in the debate and what I believe strongly is that we just settled this question and we should give the bill an opportunity to work. But it is not the kind of bill where you should say, in my view, no way, no how. If the legislature has significantly changed their views on this from 2.5 years ago, which would surprise me, I'm all ears. I'm willing to listen.
Let's go back to our emails. And this is one we got from Ginny, who wants to talk about money for Lake Champlain. Ginny wrote us, this is a really tough budget year, a lot of worthy demands for funds. Why did you choose clean water in Lake Champlain as a priority this year? I know it has a pretty big price tag. Ginny also wants you to know that she is a supporter of clean water. On the flip side, some people might look at this and say, wow, Lake Champlain has a huge problem. The legislation, I think, raises about $12 million a year to fight this problem. Some people think that's not going to do it.
Well, it wouldn't be enough. But don't forget, that's one of many federal funding sources. I mean, Senator Leahy, Sanders, and Congressman Welch are very adept at getting us federal money. I think they pulled down about $40 million last year alone. We're raising private money thanks to Green Mountain, Cure Green Mountain. They have donated $5 million on a phone call that I had with their CEO, Brian Kelly. So we've created a clean water fund. But let's go to Ginny's question. We cannot, as a state, and it's not just Lake Champlain, this is all about all the state's waters. We're losing the battle against clean water. And in a state that treasures our natural resources, that, you know, puts Green Mountain State on our license plates, that's a huge tourist attraction, where we live here because of our quality of life, we literally have water that's so polluted that you, in the summertime, you don't want to get near it. It's got blue-green algae blooms. You wouldn't want to swim in it. You wouldn't want to fish in it. In fact, you wouldn't even want to sleep in a camp next to it because it stinks so badly. I mean, this is not okay. So I'm really proud that the state has come together and followed my recommendation to pass a bill that's going to comprehensively leave our kids and our grandkids with cleaner water, not just lakes, but throughout the state. Now, in terms of the amount of money, we put forward a budget that a proposal the legislature is working through, and they're doing a great job, that raises the money that we think we need to significantly reduce our water pollution problems going forward. It's important to remember that this isn't going to happen overnight. We're going to make the investments now, and we're going to get the rewards much later, but we've got to do it. And we know there's three sources of pollution in this state, primarily to our waters. One is obviously runoff from dirt roads and bad erosion. It just picks up natural phosphorus. As with the climate change induced storms, we get more rain piled on us, water washes more phosphorus in. We've got to work together with our municipalities and state to do ditching and conservation better. Second, impervious surfaces. That means paved surfaces, rooftops. We've got a plan to help have them contribute to this challenge, because that water all ends up in our waterways. And third and finally, farms are about 40% runoff from farms. And we're going to work together with farmers through this bill to, you know, have them join us. And most of them want to do the right thing, but join us in doing the necessary things in terms of manure spreading and phosphorus and planting practices, tilling practices that are really going to help us solve this problem. So I'm really optimistic that the legislature is passing a bill that's going to leave our kids and grandkids with much cleaner water than what we're dealing with now in this state.
On the subject of water, let's talk to Bob in Walden. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. It's my understanding that the companies that withdraw water from our aquifers for bottled water don't pay any tax on that public resource that they are withdrawing from the state. Is this a possible, if this is true, is this a possible revenue source in these fiscal tough times? And one last comment I would make to the governor. Until the governor, not only Governor Shumlin, but past governors and the legislatures, find the huevos to institute 25-foot buffer zones around all our rivers and streams, nothing is going to help Lake Champlain. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. And, you know, buffers are part of our plan, just so you know, and working together with farmers, not only on the buffer issues, but some of the other challenges that we're facing. So we're on that. And I'm trying to remember what the first part of your...
The companies that withdraw water.
Oh, companies that withdraw water, right. We've looked at the taxing of companies that withdraw water. And whenever you get into the details, it never looks quite as good as it sounds. So our water companies, we used to have Vermont Pure. They used to actually bottle it here and do the whole deal. Now my understanding is that they got bought out and it gets shipped off somewhere. But they get a very low price for the water that they take out in, you know, milk tanker trucks to wherever they send it. So, frankly, there's not much money there when you actually look at taxing it, and that's the bad news.
We've only got a little bit of time left, but there's an education restructuring bill over at the State House. The House passed their bill. The Senate has changed it a little bit. Basically, they're hoping to have larger school districts going forward. You've talked about the need right at the beginning of the session of reducing property tax burdens. Some people don't think that this bill, while they support the bill, they don't think it's going to have much of an impact on property tax burdens for at least a year or two. If that's the case, then what happens to the issue of property tax relief?
Well, I don't think any of us promised that turning the ship around is going to happen immediately, and therefore that you wouldn't see immediate property tax relief. But what the work that both the House and the Senate have done is incredibly important. They followed many of the recommendations I put forward to move our delivery of our education from a system that was designed for 110,000 kids to the one that was designed for what we currently have, which is 78,000, recognizing that that number is going to keep dropping, that we've got the highest per pupil spending in the country, and that we're hurting kids because some of our schools are so teeny, little micro schools, that we're literally taking educational opportunities from them that they need to survive in this 21st century workforce. So I know this is a complex issue to bring up at the end of the show, but I think that we found the balance of partnering with local communities to ensure that we're making the right choices for their communities that will strengthen quality and reduce cost in big ways going forward, as Pomfret and Bridgewater just did in this last town meeting round.
So the Senate bill, if I understand it, says to a small school that if they're providing a quality education at a reasonable price, there's no reason for them to merge into a larger district. Is that okay?
That is okay. There's no reason to merge unless it's going to both improve quality and reduce cost. However, I think the real point of the bill is that it's a partnership where we can actually measure outcomes, look at what we're doing, and come up with a new both governance structure that's going to save big money for Vermonters going forward. So I think this is actually a huge step forward for Vermonters that concern not only about property taxes, but about quality of education.
We'll be following many of these issues in the coming weeks. Governor Peter Shumlin, many thanks for being on the program today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That is our program for today, and a reminder that VPR offers online live coverage of the Vermont House and Senate anytime those chambers are in session. You can listen to floor debates as they happen by going to VPR.net or using the VPR app on your smartphone. Monday on Vermont Edition, it must be springtime because we've got garden advice from Charlie Nardozzi. Send your questions by writing to Vermont Edition at VPR.net. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Sungari, and Sam Gale Rosen, with production assistance from Devin Karambulis. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.